Well, welcome back to another episode. And today we're going to be talking about kind of the weight of your dog. So this might be possibly triggering to some of us if your dog's a little bit sensitive, like mine are. But we're going to be talking about what that number means. I think we all know the number of our the weight of our dog. When we kind of take it to the vet, we put it on the scale, they tell us a number, and then our vet gives us some feedback. But we're going to be going into this topic of, and that's why we phrase this episode as a question of how heavy should my dog be? So how concerned should we be, for those extra couple pounds, few pounds, if you see your dog get a little more chunky? But also, as a culture, I think we tend to think bigger dogs are a little bit chubby, dogs are a little bit cuter. I remember for my one dog lost a lot of weight. We used to call her Potato with Legs because she was just like so chubby and so little. And to us, it was cute, but I know that it is not healthy. So Dan is always just here to walk us through of what is kind of the science around it. And we'll
Yeah.
get into the actual facts around how heavy should my dog be and really what we use for factors around that. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jen. Yeah, I know your experience is common. You
It
know what I mean?
is.
Like you've probably if you're listening to the show, maybe you've at least seen this at some point. People are judgmental about other people's dogs' body composition. You know, there are some people that just in general have a tough time biting their tongue when it comes to doggy stuff. Like I don't know like what that is. It's just like people
Yeah, I
are,
don't know
it's a
either.
voiceless animal. And so people feel okay being like, I know this owner doesn't know what's right. I'm going to express something on behalf of the dog. And it's either like, did you know, like, don't go walk your dog on a day that's as hot as today, or don't, I can't believe you're starving your dog. It looks that way. That's sort of the one I'm coming back to here is like,
Right, the other
there's,
end of the spectrum, right? It's like your dog's so skinny. What are you not feeding
you're
it?
torturing it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't know. We could probably spend a whole show on the social factors, but if we want to talk about what is healthiest for the dog, we are going to work on that today.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we'll kind of play off this, how heavy should my dog be? And what does it truly mean? I'll phrase it as a question, like what does it truly mean for your dog to be too fat, quote
Yeah.
unquote? Like kind of that we like I kind of said at the end, first at the beginning of our show, it's like that chubbiness, but what does it mean to be like too fat? Let's kind of walk through that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like basically, the fat is at the root of the problem because anyone, you don't have to like be conversant in the science around obesity and nutrition when it comes to dogs and cats to know that like being too fat is unhealthy. Everybody understands that at some level, like there was a point in human history where, and it probably was like true because chronic diseases weren't a serious threat. And it was like having a huge body was a sign of good health because it meant you weren't going to starve. And that was the bigger threat. But at this point in our cultural development, everyone knows that it's not healthy to have a ton of fat in your body. It's like there are on the human side, and this is sort of like in my judgment, this bleeds over into the doggy world too. Like there are social aspects of it. You know what I mean? And when it's like there's marketability and sexual attraction and kind of like expectations and all these weird social issues that also play into it, cause things like eating disorders and we and like really difficult things to deal with on the human side. And so it's like when it comes to us and how we manage our own body composition, it's more, there's just like a thornier issue. There's like more stuff to it. But like your dog, as far as I've always believed, and I don't think anyone's going to disagree, like for them, they don't have these like identity crises and self-judgment or like peer judgment or any of that. It's really just about, from the animal's perspective, it's really like what's good for them is what's best for their health. And that's sort of the only issue.
Yeah, and health also is like health equals lifespan. Health equals, reduction of disease and things like the weight on its framework, the stress that it's putting on the body. And yeah, I do agree with you from the social factor. And I also, when you were talking, it made me think of like chubby babies equal happy, chubby puppies equal happy. And so we kind of like get this notion of like, but it's so happy. It's like, even though, yeah, I might have some extra weight going around, you could kind of tell like a heavier dog that might be too fat. It's in stress, it's panting, it's, you know, so we have to kind of remember dogs don't carry the same psychological factors as humans of like, I'm so happy. So
I know.
yeah,
Yeah, I
it is about
follow on social media some accounts that are really just geared towards like they only are popular because it is cute to see a fat dog or cat. They're like just,
Yeah.
you know, that like they're testament to the fact that yeah, there is something there that's cute. And
Yeah.
I won't deny it, but it's like at the end of the day, for me, like part of my responsibility as a dog owner is to resist those little emotional urges when I know through more cold, careful reasoning that my dog can't do on its own behalf, that
Right.
I got to make a different decision for it, you know?
Right. Yeah,
But you're right.
exactly.
Health span, lifespan, those are the two kind of ways to think about health as far as I'm concerned. Lifespan, really simple. It's just like, how long is the animal going to live? And what are it's typically the inverse of how at risk for chronic disease is it? Risk, you know, chronic diseases are what kill dogs. And then the other is health span is just a little bit different concept where it's sort of like in this day and age, you can keep someone, dog or person, alive, even though it's not getting a great deal of like good quality out of its life. You know what I mean? Like you could think of a bed-bound person on a on life support type stuff as the extreme end of something that's alive but is not getting much, like its health span is already over. So, but you're touching on it. It's like there, if your dog is seriously overweight, then it's not going to be able to do some of the things that it definitely gets some enjoyment out of. And so, fortunately, in this case, like lifespan and health span tend to go hand in hand, like they're right next to each other. And so it's kind of easy to think about the paradigm for like, okay, what does it really mean to be too fat?
And I think the when I think about caretaking, our caretaking responsibility, like you said, I was a responsible pet owner. And I think, you know, when I think about my friends and family that have had, and myself that had a dog that had an extra few pounds, it never was, I never sat down and said, I need to put some pounds on my dog. You know, it never was a very intentional or even so go as so far as malicious behavior. It was, you know, the back in the day, we used to like take do table scraps to our dog. It was a very social thing of like, oh, you want some? You're so cute, begging. But then we would quickly see that she was gaining weight, or our family dogs were gaining weight, or not getting enough exercise. So yeah, there is that like responsibility there of like, yes, but don't give them, you know, don't give them, you know, people food and make sure they get enough exercise. So yeah,
It's real. It's
it's
real.
real.
It's like, I mean, the thing, the, you know, my book is really about the issue of obesity. It touches on a bunch of health conditions, but it's really about like the fact that obesity is so common among dogs and cats. And why the heck is it so common? This, you'd think this is something that pet owners could manage really easily, given how clearly it is linked with chronic disease, reduced lifespan. And I guess that's what I was going to say is like by far the most impactful thing, once you get past like giving enough food so it doesn't starve and not giving it a food that actively poisons it, like actually harms it in the short run toxically, obesity is basically the third most significant thing that you can really impact, that you can do that's going to have a material measurable difference in like how long your dog lives on, you know, like again, we're always talking about averages here. And it's unfortunately the case that like not every dog, you could do everything exactly right and tragedy can still happen. But on average, there's nothing even remotely close that you can do that will extend your dog's lifespan more than keeping it at a healthy body composition. It's just like it makes a huge difference, more than a lifetime of smoking for a person, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. And before we kind of go into the actual like body weight and really talking about that, can you give us some statistics? Like you said, obesity is very common with dogs. What are the statistics around dogs that are obese?
Yeah, so we're gonna get into this show on this show, the issue of, well, what qualifies as too fat, meaning what qualifies as overweight? Like, are we really drawing the line at the right place? But outside of that, let's ignore that for one second, and let's just use the like most commonly drawn definition. And we're gonna get to what that is in a second. But just according to like the most basic garden variety, not so progressive definition of obesity in dogs, more than half of the dogs and cats in the country are overweight or obese. So what I always say to people is like, if you just pick the next dog you see at random, or if I'm talking to somebody for the first time, I say like, I've never met your dog, and I don't mean to judge you in any kind of way, but the odds are that more likely than not, your dog is overweight or obese, more than half the dogs in the country. So the next one that's walking by in the street is more likely to be too fat than not.
Right. Yeah,
Really
absolutely.
common.
Yeah, I can't wait till those that are watching the show, we'll talk about like body composition charts and things like that of where people kind of visually land of like, that looks normal though. It will kind of walk through. So yeah, super, well, that'll be a super interesting part of that. So when I go to the vet, I'm always weighing the dog. She's talking about weight. Oh, they need to lose this. Or in my diabetic dog's case, she needs to gain weight. Why? Let's kind of talk about body weight. And is that the best factor for kind of determining too fat, too skinny, good, bad, on this huge scale, for a health perspective?
It's not horrible. It's not horrible, but it's really imprecise. Like what we care about is not having too much fat in the body. That's what obesity is. It's not a condition of having too much weight in the body. It's a condition of having too much fat in the body. And there are other things in your body that have weight besides fat, right? Like our amount of muscle that we have, our bones have weight, the food in our stomachs have weight, all that kind of stuff. So you can be have the exact same amount of fat in your body as somebody else and yet have completely different body weights. If you have different amounts of muscle, you have different food in your stomach, blah, blah, blah. That said, no one had a very good way to measure with particularity how much fat was in your body until pretty recently. You know, not like 100 years ago, you couldn't measure that directly. There are technologies have been developed more recently that allow you to evaluate that stuff if you're in the right kind of setting, the right kind of laboratory. But like the technology for judging how much people or dogs or things weigh came along much quicker. And because fat does weigh something, evaluating how much you weigh became like a reasonable way to think about whether or not you're overweight or not. And it works really well on like the averages. Like if you take a group of like 100 people, then your very lean but very muscular people, or your very fat but with very little muscle people, kind of like come out in the wash, and you can see. But like on an individual case, it can be really misleading. You know what I mean? Like you could have two people that weigh 200 pounds. One of them can be clinically obese, and the other one can be as lean as people get. You know, like bodybuilders are as lean as people are made, and they weigh a ton. And it's just like, well, that
Just
makes no
thinking the
sense.
same thing. I'm astounded whenever I watch body building competition, especially in the female category, and they'll list their weights. I'm like, there's no way. There's no way. There's
Yeah,
not
it's
an ounce of
big.
fat on her.
Yeah, exactly. It weighs more. A pound, like, you know, for volume wise, density wise, muscle is like denser than fat. So it weighs even more.
And
But
I
yeah, it's a
know,
reasonably good way to think about it. So is like other things that are based on body weight. So they don't have this an analog for this concept in the doggy world, but what's called a body mass index is a thing in the human world where you basically take weight and height and look at the relationship between the two. So again, you're not measuring fat directly, you're measuring weight directly and making a judgment based on that. And so it's not the end of the world. It's like not, if you got nothing else, it's not a bad thing. The problem is a couple of things. One is, like we said, it's not a direct measure, which means that you've got like possibly you're going to have the same thing that we talked about with bodybuilders in the human realm. Those equivalents exist in the doggy world too. And if you just rely heavily on weight, you can end up being led to the wrong conclusion. You're very muscular, very lean dog. Your vet might say, oh, it weighs more than I think it ought to weigh. But even more significant, this is something that doesn't apply in humans, but does apply in dogs. You have this huge physical diversity among healthy dogs. You know, we talk about this on the show all the time. My dogs are more than 10 times as big as your dog.
Yep.
And that's the case regardless of whether your dog is like fat or not fat. Like they're just way bigger. And there's no equivalent to that like in the human world. Like I am a relatively big person, but I'm not 10 times bigger than any other adults.
Right.
You know what I mean? There's not 20 pound adults out there that in any kind of significant numbers.
Yeah.
So in the dog world, you know, in the human world, you'll see like very rough weight-based guidelines around what your body should weigh. And again, it's subject to the stuff we were talking about, but it'll be like for an adult male, if you are 6 feet tall, you should weigh about 170 pounds or something like that. Mm-hmm. In the dog world, like you can't even do that without some additional limitation because the spread is just huge. You know what I mean? So there's no way to be like, well, if your dog should be healthy if it's 50 pounds. Like you need to know what kind of dog we're talking about here at bare minimum for that to be helpful at all.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And within that size difference, there is a difference in the smaller sized dogs of a 1 to 2 pound gain versus a large dog that gained 2 pounds, 5 pounds. So it's almost impossible to compare the two. So it is
Yeah. I mean, well, we'll get to it. I think that conceptually the type of solution that folks came up with.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about the history of it. It's interesting history. It to judge fatness in dogs is pretty good as an idea. It's like, okay, this is a pretty good idea, better than just weight. But it's like inherently it's not easy to think about this as a concept.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, we like you said, we always talk about like I have the small little my sassy seniors and you have the huge St. Bernards. And let's kind of talk about these breed differences. So, you know, the weight ranges is kind of typically what I understand, like weight ranges for different breeds. So let's kind of talk about science and all the evidence behind that.
Yep. So if you dog breeds are basically there are organizations in the United States, there are like organizations that set the standard for each breed and everybody gets together within the organization and essentially through a democratic process, choose what they say. This is what the standard should be for our breed. And that standard is used to govern like selection of who the best representative of the breed is in the show environment. So when you have a dog show, it's broken down by breeds, right? This allows like the contestants in that competition to be judged one breed against another, like to be like, well, this is a St. Bernard, this is a Yorkie, and we're going to make, our judges are going to determine whether this is a better St. Bernard than this is a Yorkie. Like it allows them to compare with each other, right?
Right.
And so those breed standards have qualitative qualities where they'll say things like, you know, it should have a brown coat with white spots. And then it's got quantitative stuff. In most cases, there's no like, there's not just one like outline that everybody fills in. Everybody's written somewhat differently. But there's quantitative stuff too. It'll say something like this many inches tall at the shoulder, this long, this much body weight. And so if you have a purebred dog, you can go to the internet and ask Google, how much should my male St. Bernard weigh? And Google will return a number to you at a range. And in all likelihood, I haven't done this right here, but it's going to be pulling it directly from the St. Bernard Club of America's St. Bernard breed standard. And it'll say something like 140 to 180 pounds for males, something like that. So you can find that. Assuming you have a purebred dog and you know what gender or sex it is, you're going to be able to pull that number.
Okay. And
that's the only place those numbers come from. So you don't, you in all likelihood, if you, again, if you have a purebred dog, you have probably heard more than once in your life how much the animal ought to weigh. Fundamentally, whoever's giving you that advice is repeating that one source of information. There has never been a study where scientists have in an organized way been like, we're going to take all the St. Bernards and we're going to look at the relationship between body weight and lifespan, and we're going to figure out which body weight lives the longest. That's never been done in any breed ever, ever. So regardless of whether it's your neighbor or your vet or your dog breeder or the judge at a dog show, if somebody is telling you, well, you have a St. Bernard and it's a male and I know my information and it should be 150 pounds, what they're saying is, I know the breed standard that these people came up with. That's the only source of that information. And it's not like there's kind of a couple of things to note about it. One is that, like I said a second ago, it's definitely not based on science. It's just based on these people that, again, I'll just keep using St. Bernard as an example. Like, they know St. Bernards really well. They've been around St. Bernards all their lives. They've seen which ones win in the show typically. They've seen what they used to look like, what they look like today. They've seen all kinds of different ones. And they've said, this is what the number should be. But even the number they choose, like, not only is there no science justifying it as like the best for its health.
Right.
It's also the case that it's like not even, that's not even what they claim to be doing. Like, they just basically say, well, at this weight range, it's the best representative of the breed. And that doesn't just mean how long it's going to live. It means things like, you look at the history of the breed. And if it was bred to, like in the case of St. Bernards, to pull carts, dig people out of avalanches, things like that. Maybe you want a bigger dog or a longer coat or all these qualities that like just serve this really weird, vague concept of like the purpose for which the breed was developed. And so somebody might very intelligently be like, well, a St. Bernard is supposed to be 140 to 170 pounds. And I might say, well, why is that? Does that mean they live the longest? And they go, no, of course not. It just means that that's the best way to represent the breed. And it's just like, okay, so that's not really, in my case, not being a dog show contestant, I'm not so concerned with that. You know, I don't need to win. I want my dog to have as long a lifespan and as long a health span as possible.
And this is like blowing my mind. I guess I always thought of that ranges of like, I don't know, genetic sequencing or like something with like their ideal weight based upon these criteria. It's all based upon dog shows.
Yeah. And it's all based on dog. Wow. That like breed specific stuff. Like really, as far as I'm aware, well, I mean, it's expensive to do scientific work.
Yeah.
And in the doggy world, there is far, far less available money to go around for this stuff than in the human world. And so it's just not the case. And you start to think about how many breeds of dog there are and how many of each breed you need in order to get a reasonable idea based on statistics of like what a good average is. You start to see it becomes a huge endeavor. Like if you were going to really, it would be one thing to run the study of golden retrievers. And, you know, but even then you're talking about following dogs over their lifespan. Like it's a long process. And you're going to do that for all, I don't know off the top of my head how many breeds there are, but like, you know, 150 plus, something like that. It's like a huge exercise.
That's some dollar signs around
that. Some big dollar signs. Yeah, exactly.
And my dogs are both mutts. Like they're
It completely ignores them. Yeah.
And I fostered. I was foster failure times two, but I adopted them, and it was literally a guess as to their breed. Like Maddie, they were like, "Oh, she kind of looks like a Chihuahua, but also got the Papillon ears." So that's a blend of, you know, they're similar sized dogs, but a small Chihuahua and a Papillon, I mean, even that's like a 5-pound difference in between their ranges. So So we'll kind of get into how do we measure? So weight is kind of a factor that's not quite ideal. So one of the visuals that came out in this industry is called body condition scoring charts, or BCS, right? It kind of goes by that nomenclature. Acronym. So let's kind of walk through it.
These came out. I said, they have an interesting history, which is to say like livestock. Basically, that was the interesting history is like when farmers were evaluating how good, how like saleable, like how marketable their cows or sheep were. They had to come up with a concept that would reflect like how fat, how much fat is in this animal. And so That's they amazing. Started using this concept of body condition scoring charts. And basically what it is you get a visual and like qualitative textual description of the how the animal's body looks and feels. And based on that, you assign it one of like 5 or 7 or 9, depending on which of the specific systems you're using, you assign it to one of these categories. And there have been studies run that will tell you, look, if you put your dog in this category, it means its body composition in all likelihood is between X and Y percent body fat.
Wow.
Which, so pull one out. It's like, I remember writing this component of the book, like this part of the book, and just being like, it's so much harder to talk about it than it's a really simple concept when you like see it. So if anybody's like listening to this and you like, if you're going to just watch the video for one, this might be like the one to watch.
The one to watch. Yeah. I don't think there's any way that we could accurately describe aside from the numbers and what the dog looks like. But yeah, this is certainly a visual one.
So we'll I know we've got like two, this is one I created, which is basically based on all the same information as you've seen in more popular ones with a few different bells and whistles put on there. But I'm just going to do my best now to try to describe for anybody that's listening. Like what you get on mine, you've got 5 different like silhouette categories. So I've got an image of the dog from above, like looking down on the silhouette of a generic dog. And then I've got one looking at it from like the side, like if the animal is just standing and I'm looking at it in profile.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You can see the silhouette and you can see sort of how steep the stomach, like the abdominal tuck slopes upward.
Right.
You can see if you're looking using the silhouette where you're looking down on it, you can see, are we talking about a sausage shape or are we talking about like an hourglass shape? Does it have a waist or not? And so those, and then basically everything else on the chart is just like qualitative ways to describe that same stuff that you can just see. It's like, you've got your like specific silhouettes and you just go, okay, my dog looks like that one the most, as opposed to like this one the most. And then you see the implications of that throughout the chart. It's like, okay, this means your dog's body fat is probably between X and Y, that kind of stuff.
It always amazes me, like being new to this, some of these descriptions. For example, the most emaciated version is the ribs. So it has like a column describing the ribs and the pelvic bones. It's all visible from 20 plus feet away. So it's just, you know, it's very particular of how they're measuring these different categories.
Yeah. So do you have the one also, the Nestle?
Yeah, let's pull up the Purina one.
This is the most, as you might have guessed, I don't yet have as much influence in the pet industry as Nestle Purina Pet Care, the largest pet food company in the world, does. And so this is theirs. This is one that's like, you can see it's basically the same concepts as mine. We've got like a dog in profile, a dog looking down on it, and then a like 2-sentence description of the body, talking about things like the ribs, the spine, the abdominal tuck. And it just instructs you to like feel, okay, can I easily feel the ribs or not? Mm-hmm. And basically the science that's been done on these is 2 things. One is like when these are used, do people tend to put the dogs in the same category? Like, do they work? Are they user-friendly enough?
Right.
Where if I use this same chart and I take the same 50 dogs and I tell a group of a dozen people that aren't talking to each other, all right, each of you put each of these 50 dogs into one of these groups, one or the other. Use this chart and tell me, is this a dog a number 1 or a number 9 or what? People tend to give the same answer. More or less, people are like good at doing it. The chart works in that way.
Yeah.
And then the second thing that's been done is that the amount of body fat that's in the dog that's in whichever category tends to be pretty consistent. So the amount of body fat, if you're a category 1, tends to be whatever, less than 5%. If you're a category 3, it tends to be maybe 8 to 15%. I don't have the study off the top of my head, but it's something like that. And so it's like, mm-hmm. between those 2 things, they work. Like that's like a way of saying like this is a good way to just take a random dog, doesn't matter what breed it's in, doesn't matter how tall it is, and I can just touch it and look at it for 30 seconds or something and get a pretty good idea of how much body fat is inside the dog.
Yes. And it's good. Not, yeah, exactly. It's not weighing them. It's not like, oh, it's too skinny because it's this weight. It's you're literally feeling and seeing the ribs. Like it talks about palpitating many times throughout here. So you're physically examining the dog. So yeah, it's, and let's kind of talk about this ideal. And you know, in your book, you talked about this, you know, U-shape curve and yeah, let's just yeah, walk yeah. through of the like, Goldilocks. You know, the Goldilocks.
Like basically, okay. So I love the idea of body condition scoring charts for dogs. It's really smart idea, works really well in terms of diagnosing how much fat is in a random dog. But I really dislike an aspect of them too, which is that in all of them, except for the one that I put out there, you don't just have, it doesn't just stop at like putting a dog in a category, a number category, a one or a four right. or a nine. It also assigns a judgment to that, where if you're in the case of this popular Purina one, if you give your dog a one, which is the leanest, or a two or a three, according to this body conditions chart, it's too thin. If you give it a four or a five, it is ideal. And if you give it a six, seven, eight, or nine, it is too heavy. I have an issue with that. And the issue is that that type of framing doesn't like depict the evidence. The evidence doesn't say that the leanest type of dog is actually too thin and you need to fatten that dog up or it's gonna suffer in some kind of way. It's less right. healthy than a dog that is somewhat fatter. That's, you know, that's what's implied by these things. If you like go into your vet's office and you have a very lean dog and you see this on the wall, your vet might very well be like, yeah, you need to fatten your dog up a little bit. It's not as healthy as it could be if you fattened it up a bit more. That is unquestionably not what the evidence shows. The evidence is not extensive, but it's discussed in my book. And to the extent that it exists in the doggy world, it matches up with a much bigger body of evidence from the human world. And right. all that stuff kind of shows the same thing, which is that body composition and health aren't linked by like a U-shaped curve where there's, or like a Goldilocks zone where it's like, there's the too little and then there's the too much and then there's just right. That's right. not what the evidence shows. What the evidence shows is that the leaner your dog is, the longer it is likely to live. And it's like period asterisk. It's basically a period with just a little bit of an asterisk after it. But it's much more like it is by far a better reflection of the evidence to say the leaner, the better, full stop, than it is to say U-shape curve is the right way. Goldilocks is the right way. That's not true. Your dog on average is likely to live longer if it is leaner than the ideal section of the Nestle Purina 1 through 9 body composition scoring chart.
Yeah, you even have on your version, your chart, this little nice little call out. Adult dogs with BCS less than 5 live 16% longer than their overweight peers.
Yeah, and so that's based on like kind of the, there's like the Cadillac or like Rolls Royce study for this issue is this group of researchers took 48 dogs, followed them from puppyhood all the way through to the end of their lives and fed them different amounts and watched as their bodies develop different sizes as a result of being fed different amounts. And then they watched when they got diseases, how long they lived, all that kind of thing. And generally speaking, there were kind of two groups primarily. And the main finding, like if you just disregard the data and just read like the conclusions section of the paper, it's like our lean group lived longer than our fat group. And that's sort of what that you're alluding to right there is like the lean group on average lived 16% longer than the a little bit fat group on average. And so that's kind of like the key study that everybody in the veterinary community refers back to when they're saying it's unhealthy to be fat. Because it's sure. like that, and because that conclusion that they drew from the paper is totally right on the money. It unquestionably is better to be somewhat lean than somewhat fat. But where what they don't say explicitly, but is clearly shown in the data itself, is that it's not just binary. Like our language around obesity is really binary, where it's just like there's a magical line somewhere. And if your dog's over the right. magical line, it's too fat and therefore it's bad for its health. But if it's below the line, it's perfect, ideal. That's not what it shows. What it shows is that the leanest dogs on average live the longest of all. That like the leaner your dog is, the longer it's likely to live. Again, same study, same data. It's just like where they focus the conclusion. And in a lot of cases, it like doesn't matter. Because like I was saying at the beginning of the show, like even if you use the mainstream understanding, if you just accept what's in the Nestle Purina body condition scoring chart as like being true, and that there's the, like a BCS of 4 or 5 is ideal. Even by that standard, more than half the dogs in the country are overweight or obese. You know what I mean? So it's like, you've got a huge issue to deal with just there.
Yeah.
What's like even more is what I try to make the case for in the book. It's like kind of a weird case to make is like, don't think of it as being like over a threshold is bad. Think of it as like, it's you always could do a little better. You just always can. Like, it's like how lean can the, if you really want your dog to live as long as possible, think of it like a professional athlete thinks of their body, where it's like, it's not the only thing that they think about on a daily basis, but they're going to keep it really lean. Cause that's like, it's not like you want your, the best track stars are like, oh, he has an average body.
Right.
No. If you want to do what's real, it's hard for them and it's hard for us normal mortal people. But like generally, they want to be as lean as possible. As long as they're not losing muscle mass, as long as they're not losing energy, they want to be as lean as possible. And the same thing should govern how you think about your dog. What you really want is just the animal to be as healthy as possible. That's the rule you should use.
So what are some good starting points for someone that is looking at their dog? They're like, okay, I listened to this episode. I know she's a little bit chunky, a little bit too heavy. Like where do they start aside from obviously talking with your vet and working on a plan that's best for your dog? You know, is it the food? Is it the exercise? Is it the balance? Like what can you kind of give from a science perspective for really working towards that leaner is better mentality?
I mean, both will move the needle, but diet moves the needle way, way, way more than exercise.
Yeah.
Like you can, if you, to start in the human realm for a minute, anyone that's listening to this has probably one time or another tried to lose weight in their own lives. You have the amount of physical exercise you have to do if you're not going to eat well, if you're like, I know I don't have enough, like, I'm a baker and I got cupcakes around all day. Right. I'm going to eat them. That's just going to happen. But I'm going to exercise a lot. The amount of exercise you have to do is obscene. You know what I mean? You have to do like professional athlete levels of exercise because 1 hour of running, you could just eat your way through that. You can eat your way through that pretty easily. It doesn't take that much. And so if you, that same concept applies to your dog, except kind of even more so because their bodies aren't as big as ours. And the amount of calories that you expend to go a mile is lower for them than it is for us because we're bigger. And so, you know, you take your dog for a 1 mile walk a day, you're talking about 100 calories, you know, it's just not that much. It's just not that much. So
yeah, it's good from obviously a social perspective and, you know, bonding with your dog and getting them outside, but from a like lose weight, be healthy perspective, it's got to start with their plate. It's got to start with their food.
I think that any vet, you know, like my perspective on what's healthy nutritionally for the animal is not like what is taught in vet school. I believe that the curricula is wrong and they ought to be being taught something else that's reflected better in the evidence. But that said, I'm in the minority there, not in the majority. I am not in the minority on this issue though. This is like, everybody says the same thing. It just doesn't move the needle.
Right.
Like it kind of does, but just not really. Really, you got to start with diet. That's the bigger issue.
And it also, I'll make sure I link it in show notes. We did a whole episode 8 of how carbs make dogs fat, the evidence, and we walk through the more science. So if you want to kind of get nitty gritty in terms of like, okay, so I need to change diet, what do I do? That will really truly walk through of like the fat, the protein, the carbs, and why carbs are the thing that makes your dog fat. So
that's right.
Yeah, it is rather alarming how quickly they do gain weight. Cause I remember at one point in time I was making homemade dog food, looking back, stupid idea for a lot of reasons, but I just remember it was within a 2-week time span. I mean, yeah. Both of my girls, like looking back on pictures, I was like, I thought I was doing the right thing. I was, you know, the rice, the veggies, the chicken, and the proportions were just the way off. So it's, yeah, we just have to be very responsible and just know what's right for them. And of course, work with your vet, but carbs are a good place to start for sure.
I mean, look, ignore the evidence. Let's ignore the issue of like who is interpreting the evidence more reasonably, who's right in that regard or not. I will tell you that you cannot make a dog obese unless you feed it carbohydrate. It might be easy to make your dog, and I've seen it firsthand myself. You overfeed your dog a typical garden variety kibble product that's 40% carbohydrate. It is super easy to overfeed it and it will start packing on pounds. It is not hard to do. It is inadvertent in tons of cases.
Yes.
You can't do that if you don't feed it carbohydrate. Full stop, period. I've literally never seen it once in either dogs or wolves. It doesn't happen. And so that's just one way of saying like the real problem here is carbohydrate. It's not the only way to make a dog lean. If you want to be rigorous about exercise and portion control, you can make a dog lean while feeding it carbohydrate. It's possible. One of a few ways to get there. You cannot make a dog fat without carbohydrate, though.
Yeah.
That's a fact.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, in that spirit of get, you know, lean is best. It's hard to kind of balance that social, you know, idea of like, my dog is too skinny. It's losing too much weight. It's, you know, can you kind of speak to that of like, I know we went through that of the body condition chart, but just that, what is it to be too skinny? You know, when they start to lose weight and maybe you're seeing the rib cage more than you're used to.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the only two things I would say are that number one, it's really easy to project our own perspectives emotionally, particularly emotional perspectives on body composition matters onto the animal. And when people talk, it's like a triggering thing for a lot of people talking about body weight. There are plenty of places where the nature of the discourse around that subject in the human world is toxic and is just gross and makes people feel bad about themselves in ways that follow them around for the rest of their life. And it's ugly and gross. And it can cause all kinds of different emotions to react, like, you know, emerge in order to like help somebody try to deal with that. Or you become very anxious when talk about body, like that's something I've experienced myself, where you like starts getting brought up and you start feeling uncomfortable. And it's just that kind of, it's easy. I guess that's what I'm saying. Like the first thing is like, it's just easy to project your own feelings onto the animal. And so I'd caution people to try to be mindful of that. Try to interrogate how they're feeling around this subject. Is this really what something that I'm experiencing in my own head or because of the social issues around this issue? Or is this really how I think my dog is feeling? That's one thing I would say. The other is like, I would try to be careful in parsing out similar but distinct concepts. So like, for instance, it's easy to conflate the need for food with the desire for food, for instance, right? It's like a dog, it does not, just because it is drooling or just because it is orbiting or begging for food that it sees out and wants to eat, does not mean that it's hungry. Plenty of dogs that I've had in my life, including the ones I have right now, exhibit that behavior even when they're very well fed. And so there's like this tension sort of like, if you're not just purely using a like better lifespan is better type approach to like thinking about how you're feeding your dog, it's easy to like basically be like, well, no, I can't torture him. I want him to be happy. I can't just like give him nothing he wants. And I'm just like encouraging people, use a little bit of critical thinking around that. And like, just remember the, like, is this really what the dog wants, what it needs? There's a difference between like craving of food and feeling the absence of food that is like hunger. Like think in your own experience, like there are times I want to eat and I'm not hungry. You know what I mean? Like, those are not the same. They're similar in some ways, but they're different too.
Yeah.
And also, if you want your dog to lose weight, but not to ever feel hungry, you should just take the carbs out of its diet, because then you can eat it basically as much as you want and you can't make it get fat.
Yeah, exactly. So
that's the thing. But it's just like, it's tricky because you can't ask it to just tell you to express how it feels and stuff. It's like, you got to read between the lines and it's not easy. But man, I just like to think that, like, if my dog could talk, it would be like grateful. It would express gratitude around like some critical thinking on that. If I could do my critical thinking on its behalf. And so,
and I, you know, I reflect back on my one dog, Teddy, when she was, I wouldn't say obese, but she was heavier. And she came from a backyard breeding situation. She was in a cage for 24/7 of her life. And so there was a lot of guilt around us adopting her in, of like, she's going to live the best life ever. And so we really did extend more treats to her. We really, I would say, pampered her with food. And something I've had to recondition myself as a responsible dog owner is interact with your dogs outside of food, do enrichment activities.
Yeah, like, exactly.
You know, it doesn't always have to be, you know, oh, here's a treat, I love you so much. There's a lot of other interactions that are outside of the food realm. So,
it's weird. It's like, I have a puppy, he's 10 months old. And like, he gets very excited when it's time to eat. Very, very excited. He gets very excited when it's time to go for a walk too. And like, we walk our dogs pretty as regularly as we feed them. You know what I mean? They expect, they know it's that time of day and they're going to expect it. That's not always been the case in how I've raised my dogs at home. Mm. And in my experience, whatever's done with more regularity tends to get them, like, that's what they get juiced up about.
Yeah.
And so it can get really easy to be like, well, the only thing that gets my dog super stoked is feeding time, because I haven't done a good job walking it. He no longer comes to expect that. But like, you got to be kidding me if you don't think like, dog doesn't like running around outside every bit as much. Like, that is the picture of joy, is like dogs running around at the dog park. That is pure joy. And so, they like that. It's harder for you as an owner. You can't just like, choop, choop, like it happened. You got to go do something, but you're kidding yourself if you're like, my dog doesn't like that.
Yeah, exactly. So this was hopefully very educational in terms of really identifying if your dog is, quote, too fat, quote, you know, really more on the lean side, and why that is more healthy and all the science behind that. So feels like a good place to end unless you want to add anything.
I agree with you. It feels like a good place to end, but I have another thing I want to just say. And it's so useless. if you're listening to this show at this point, I am really confident that you're not a veterinarian. And yet I'm speaking to that tiny audience that is hanging around. One thing that you often hear from the veterinary community is that obesity is a difficult subject to talk about with pet owners. They're like, there's no debate in the veterinary community over whether the obesity issue is a crisis among companion animals in the US. Like, it clearly is.
Yeah.
Everybody says it. Everybody's totally on the same page. What you will hear commonly, though, is vets say things like, oh, yeah, but like, owners aren't trying to hear that. You're casting judgment. They start pushing back on it. They're going to go to a different vet next time, somebody that's less likely to tell them things they don't want to hear. And I'm inclined to believe them. I think that that's like, that is a plausible sounding. That seems like how people behave to me. Like, that's pretty realistic, which is, in my view, another reason, in addition to the fact that it actually is consistent with the evidence, why a perspective of like, the leaner is better should be what vets should be preaching too. Because like I said, primarily, don't forget, it is what the evidence shows. So like, that's the best thing. But it's also like, there's not a bad versus good in that. It's not like a, you fucked up. Oh man, pardon my French. I'm sorry. We just lost our, I'm sorry. You screwed up. Bad owner. Your dog is too fat. If you were a good, it's like, no. That's not how it works. We don't have to quantify it. We don't have to say it's bad versus good. It's just always better, leaner. The leaner you can make it, the better it's going to be. Yeah. Like, nobody's getting blamed there. It's an easier message, more palatable, more marketable.
I too am not a vet. I cannot imagine the conversation that they would have to lead with that, especially those of us who in this world think of it as our fur babies or it's a reflection of us. But yeah, I do wish that my vet would have sat me down and said, when you know better, you do better. Here's what things we can do to help get Teddy's weight down. Just kind of having that conversation versus like, she needs to be in this range versus this one. But yeah, I agree. Great point. That was a good addition.
Got to hang around here. F-bomb. Everything.
Everything. Don't worry. This will all be post-editing cleanup. Okay. Well, thank you for listening to another episode for everyone who's hanging out. And also, thank you for everyone who's sending in brands for our label review series. Like, thank you, Chef's Kiss. We love doing those. Please keep those coming. Also, please send any topics you want us to talk about in the future. Dan and I always have a running list, but our ears are always open to any other topics that you want to hear more about, the facts around, the science around. Hello@feedyourdogfacts.com is the easiest way to get a hold of us. And again, thanks for listening and subscribing. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.